Good morning, dear colleagues, dear friends. When Brian told me that I would be the first speech writing speaker of this conference, I thought, oh, that's good. I will only lose my breakfast and not my lunch. Because we all know that speaking in public is quite daunting. And of course, I send my clients onto the stage without any remorse or pity. And I even give them a little shove, if necessary, towards their destiny. But then I take up my spot in the wings, in the back of the room, because that is where we belong, in the shadows. Not because what we do doesn't bear the spotlights, and not because we are practitioners of the dark arts, as one of my American colleagues, as our profession once described, but because we write for others. In the Netherlands, we refer to that special place in the shadows as the magic of speech writing, because we think it's more beautiful, more magical, if the audience is under the assumption that the speaker wrote their own words, their own speech. Because we know that Dutch audiences value authenticity, and they only believe the speaker is authentic if we maintain that magic and if we keep to the shadows. And I believe in the power of that magic. So we never tell people, except each other, rewrote that beautiful sentence, that part of the speech you can almost dance on, that soundbite that bounces through the ether. I even wrote a whole book with loads of examples from speeches without telling what speeches I wrote and who I wrote for. Frustrating sometimes, but to be able to talk about our struggles and our successes, we have the Dead Horse Society, our speechwriters network. And that's why I think the Dutch delegation at these conferences is always the biggest. Well, we topped ourselves this time, I think, with 15. And that is, of course, why we like to drink. Yes, I believe in the magic. What I don't believe in is that the magic extends to the process, to our very existence. I don't think the magic will be disturbed if speakers acknowledge that they have help, instead of telling everybody, usually with a big sigh, I get up every morning at 5 to write my own speeches. What did I do all that time? But things that happened almost 25 years ago when I first started out as a speechwriter, but things have changed these days. 25 years ago, I was one of the first speechwriters of the Dutch civil service. And I was safely stored away in the basement of the Ministry of Education. Out of sight and certainly out of mind of the director of communications. He was convinced that speeches were not a communications tool to take seriously. Of course, the ministers had this annoying habit to get invited to conferences and openings and other public events. But that was just public relations, maybe entertainment, but certainly not a form of communications that deserved his attention. So I started looking for inspiration and for knowledge and for colleagues. And I found the one with the other. Together, we learned how to write speeches by trial and error, courses and meetings, and by a fact-finding mission to the United States. That was fun. And together, we also learned how to be speechwriters, how to take our place, our role, not only as writers, but as advisors. Because writing for others means that our profession is defined by our relationship with others. With our speakers and their audiences, of course, but also with their assistants and policy advisors, with their spin doctors and all those other people in the inner circle of power. That is not always easy. Bill Clinton once introduced one of his speechwriters as the man who types my speeches. And I have clients who really believe that all I do is put to paper the pearls of wisdom that roll from their lips. Dream on. We all know We have to dig around and often have to dig deep to get the content we need. We have to flatter and whine to make policy advisors deliver the examples we need. And we have to be grateful if we get this big pile of reports and memos. We have to find nuggets of gold in mountains of paperwork and in streams of red tape. And there are still people who think that our work is not about content, but just about words. But we are the one who make the choices. What are we really going to say? What point are we first going to make? What story are we actually going to tell? And then, of course, we have the speakers who want to sound like Obama, with lots of vision and something about Europe. And of course, they want to be funny as well. A bit like Brian's instructions for my comments today. Could you give us the state of European speech writing, the state of Dutch speech writing, and then get us into the spirit of the occasion? Of course, whatever you want. Because that's what we do. We join all the parts and make it move and moving. But there are also the speeches for which we have no parts at all, no input at all. My students sometimes ask, what do you do if your speaker has no idea what they want to say? What if you work for a speaker who has no vision? For our prime minister, for instance. My answer is you invent it. Of course, in the spirit of your speaker. What he or she doesn't yet know they want to say. Otherwise, it wouldn't be authentic. I have this really lovely client who gives a speech every year for a big corporate event. And the only thing I get is the title of the conference. I feel like a graduate student having to write their essay. Into the unknown. Discuss. To be honest, I love those free exercises, but much more rewarding than the endless battle with bureaucracies, and there are bureaucracies everywhere, not only in government, and where all those policy and communications people don't like us interfering with their responsibilities, but they love to interfere with ours. We all know, and maybe also dislike, their comments. I don't think the audience will like that story. You better stick to the facts. Hey, that's a repetition, so that can be deleted. Or the one I really loved. What a coincidence that those three words all start with the same letter. Or the one I really hate. Oh, thanks for the speech. I'm going to work on that. What do you mean? It's finished. It's beautiful. Hands off. So yes, getting your speech on the stage in mint condition is often an obstacle course. But never forget, we are responsible for the end products. That's why we have to take our role as coordinator of the process. That's the only way not to lose sight of the final results. We have to choose our battles and kill our darlings, and we have to have the guts to say no. No, that will ruin the fabric of the speech. But also, no. That's not the right point to make for this audience. And no, you cannot dance to ABBA's Dancing Queen. You will look stupid. It's not an easy role we have to play. But the last 25 years, I've seen speech writers embrace that role and grow into it. Of course, some speech writers get more room to operate, to advise than others. And of course, it depends for an important part on the relation you have with your speaker. And of course, that is sometimes easier if you work for one person. Then you can develop a strong and almost symbiotic relationship. Like they said about Kennedy and his speechwriter, Ted Sorensen. When Jack is wounded, Ted bleeds. In the Netherlands, we saw how such a long-term relationship can lead to the optimum balance of words, man, and message. in the speech our Prime Minister made in December last year to apologize for our slave history. Jan Walraven is his speechwriter, and he will love to tell you all about it. It's a good story. But beware. Yes, we have to be able to look into the head and the heart of our speakers, but not become them. Just being your master's voice without a critical distance makes you the editor-in-chief, not a speechwriter. And before I'm misunderstood, speechwriters are responsible for the end product, not for the content of the speech. I know people love to sneer that we are puppet masters that put words in the mouth of our speakers, but whatever we write, the content of the speech is the responsibility of the speaker. You can therefore also see the magic of the profession as a kind of protection for speechwriters. Nobody knows, is supposed to know, who wrote the speech, so there is no confusion. That can change when the magic is broken, when we are brought out of the shadow. This happened in the Netherlands with a speech of Sigrid Kaag, the leader of the Liberal Democrats and then Minister of Foreign Affairs. She made a speech in which she delivered a few sneers addressed at Prime Minister Mark Rutte, who she was in the cabinet with. One of the national newspapers published an article with the names of the concerned speechwriters and who wrote what. By doing that, the journalist hinted at the conclusion that they were therefore responsible for the content and not Sigrid Kaag. Kaag even reinforced that conclusion by saying, "Oh, that speech has been written a while ago. I only read it." Wow. We might want more recognition, but I don't believe we want that. I certainly don't. During my career, I saw how speechwriters are getting and claiming the recognition they deserve, although we deserve. Although I don't think that European speechwriters will soon, or even ever, get the same position as our American colleagues. That's the part about Europe, you know, you want it, yeah. I don't think that we will write books about our speakers, about what we saw at the revolution or the battle for Europe. What we do have is a growing role, a growing influence on our speakers and their message. And that influence, that power, comes, I think, with a responsibility. Just like it was for Spider-Man, which is a good word for the list, maybe. It is our responsibility to use our power wisely. That unique power we have to help somebody spread their ideas, win elections, make a profit. But what is wise? To be honest, that's a question I sometimes, well, even often struggle with. As a freelancer, I'm asked by all kinds of people and organizations to write speeches for them. But when do I say yes? When do I say no? Is it just a matter of time and money? Or are there principles involved? For instance, do I work for a political party that embraces fascism? That's an easy one. No. Do I work for a political party that does more for the rich than for the poor? Difficult. Do I work for the president of a big airline? Well, I haven't flown for 10 years on principle because I put our planets before my mobility. I struggle to answer that one. And it's an actual struggle at this moment. My question to you is, am I the only one? How do you make those decisions? Or do you think that everybody has the right to a lawyer? Just that you think that everybody has the right to a speechwriter, just like everybody has the right to a lawyer? I know we all make different choices, and there's nothing wrong with that. But how do we make them? How do you decide who to work for and who not? Or is it something that you also think about, struggle with? I hope it is something we can talk about, because that is why we are here in Oxford. Not only to discuss what we do and how we do it, but also who we are and who we can be. It's like the free exercise I love. How to be a speechwriter. Discuss. I think being a speechwriter is the best job in the world. It is sometimes lonely, sometimes challenging. Oh, this is the spirit of the occasion, Brian. Sometimes challenging, but never dull. And I love these conferences where we can talk about our struggles and our successes. So together, we can become the best speechwriters we can be. And thank you, Brian and Guy, for organizing this free exercise.